And good morning, everybody. Thank you very kindly for the intro, and here we are. Charles Friedman with you, sitting in for MZ today. And, of course, when somebody sits in for somebody, the first question you have is, well, where is the regular host? Where is MZ? Where is Michael Zwirling today, and what is he doing? Is he ill? Is he indisposed? Has he had some terrible thing happen to him that prevents him from being here? Possibly trouble with his car, flat tire, worse yet, an accident, something of this nature? No. As a matter of fact, he's in Hawaii. That lucky guy. So he gave me a call a few minutes ago, and he said, thanks for taking the program today. Said, listen, at the top of the second hour, I'd like to call in and have a few words with the radio audience about something near and dear to his heart. So that's something we have to look forward to. We will be hearing from MZ just about 60 minutes from now. But between now and then, the great things are going to happen. First of all, you'll have an opportunity to hear from me on a couple of issues. And then, better still, you'll have an opportunity to let everybody else hear from you. KSCO is your voice in the Monterey Bay. This is News Talk on the Saturday special today. I'm going to throw out some topics in the next few minutes, and hopefully they will inspire you to some great amount of thought, hopefully rational, and you will share that by dialing 479-1080 and giving the benefit of your insights to all the rest of us. So, what are a few things that we might want to talk about? Well, the other day when Rosemary called me and asked me if I would come in, she said that there was a lot of hot conversation about the comments that the Pope recently made concerning Islam and the reactions of the Muslim world to those comments. Obviously, a major story, because if there's one thing the Pope generally doesn't do, it's back down on something he says. And so this is, very unusual to say the least. But the question I think all of us are discussing is, what's the right and wrong of it? Was the Pope reasonable in what he said, and was the reaction to it reasonable? Well, here's my take on it. As I looked at what the man had to say, he quoted a Byzantine emperor from something like 600 years ago who happened to mention that one of the unfortunate things about Islam was that it promoted, or at least it sanctioned, the idea of spreading the faith through force and violence. In other words, forced conversion. Now, I think it's interesting, and I haven't heard anybody mention this, but it's certainly true. Just about 10 days ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, we had a big flap about two American journalists who had been kidnapped by, I believe, Hamas, somebody like that. Anyway, they had been kidnapped and held by Islamic extremists for a period of time. And finally, thank God, they were released unharmed, but they were forced, as a condition of release, as a matter of fact, as a condition of keeping their lives, they were forced at gunpoint to convert to Islam. So I think that possibly the Pope might have been inspired to look up that quote by something that had happened just the other day. Is it fair to say that Islam spreads itself by force? The people of sub-Saharan Africa would say yes. Islam definitely does spread itself by force. There have been many occasions. The one I just mentioned with these two reporters, obviously that's an isolated incident. I think a reasonable person would say, look, Charles, if you're going to make a charge like this, it has to be more than just one example of this nature. I'll concede that. Again, look to sub-Saharan Africa and the way Islam has spread itself there. Look to what is happening today in Sudan, in Darfur, and you will see that this is a faith that actually has a significant number of people, granted not everybody, but an awful lot of people who feel that it is okay, it is reasonable, to convert people to Islam at gunpoint, or sword point, if you prefer. Therefore, I do not believe that the Pope was justified in apologizing. I don't think he should have apologized. What I believe he might have been well advised to do was to elaborate, to make some of these points, and to say, hey, let's have the leaders of Islam specifically say, no, we don't do that. And we don't encourage that, and we denounce that when it happens. But I don't hear that. It's a very much a one-way street. I happened to be listening to the television the other day, and a commentator came up with something that was really very, very obvious. Tolerance is a two-way street. We were called upon by the Islamic world, hey, you have to give us tolerance. Well, how about giving us some? How about giving Israel some? So frankly, when the Islamic world throws another one of these fits, I'm reminded of what happened last year when there were some cartoons depicting Muhammad and all of a sudden they're burning down Dutch embassies here and there. This time they're burning down Christian churches. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. They aren't burning down Catholic churches. Evidently, it seems that they've burned down several Greek Orthodox temples, but they don't even know the difference, I guess. I don't know. Maybe it's just a matter of what's handy and where the gasoline is, but If we're ever going to progress in this sense, we've got to make it clear to our Islamic friends, hey, you know, if you want these things, you have to give these things as well. So there's one thing we might talk about. Another thing, very current, as a matter of fact, here is the San Francisco Chronicle from Thursday. That's 2 days ago. And there are three pictures here of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, who came to the United Nations and proceeded to basically vomit all over the floor. He came up with the most outrageous, outlandish comments concerning this country and its president that, you know, it was the most ridiculous performance I've seen at the United Nations since the time, I guess it must have been about 20 years ago or so, when Yasser Arafat came and addressed the UN with a loaded pistol on his hip. This guy gets the Nobel Peace Prize. Give me help. Anyway, we can talk about Chavez. What kind of stuff did he come up with here? He called the President of the United States the devil, quote, unquote. He said that President Bush talked as if he owned the world, the owner of the world. They say they want to impose a democratic model, but it's a false democracy of elites. A democracy imposed by weapons and bombs. Whenever Bush looks, he sees extremists. And you, brother, he looks at your color and he says, oh, there's an extremist. Interesting that he would throw racism into everything else. This is the first president of the United States we have ever had to have not only one but two black secretaries of state. I mean, when it comes to diversity, George W. Bush doesn't kid around. There's no tokenism here. He appoints blacks, Hispanics. Our attorney general's name is Gonzalez. He appoints these people to the highest governmental positions, not just, you know, Secretary of Transportation or something like that. No, they're right up there in the administration along with everybody else, giving advice, making policy, and doing the job of government, for better or worse. And yet this clown act sees fit to say, oh, well, he sees somebody of color and all of a sudden he's looking down his nose. Verifiably not true. Speaking of Mr. Bush, we could discuss him a little bit. He's actually had a couple of pretty good weeks. The most important thing, of course, was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, when it finally turned out that the entire brouhaha about Valerie Plame and who was it who leaked the fact that she was a CIA operative, and was it Mr. Bush and his administration and Karl Rove who were trying to punish the wife of Joe Wilson because he was an administration critic, etc., etc., all this big hoo-ha, and now it turns out the whole story was wrong. Who says so? The Washington Post says so. And the Washington Post, ladies and gentlemen, was one of the prime movers in larruping the story in the first place. I will give compliments to the Post for having the intestinal fortitude and the responsibility to actually come out and say, yes, the story was wrong. It is decent of them to do that. On the other hand, when you look back at the way they railed on this, and they relied on Joe Wilson's reckless charges to make their stories, to make their cases, you wonder, what can you trust in the media? It's getting to be that you see, oh, a story in the New York Times, and you think to yourself, well, yeah, but did it really happen? That's a terrible thing. Newspapers, in particular, their stock in trade should be their credibility. So here's a case where the Washington Post, bless them, they are trying to save their credibility by coming forth now and actually saying, hey, we had this story all wrong. Nobody in the administration did this. It never happened. I'd like to see more of that type of administration, or rather, journalistic responsibility. Our own paper, my own paper, I live in Watsonville, you know that. The Watsonville Register-Pajaronian has been mounting a campaign on its editorial page to convince people that President Bush told the American people that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the terror attacks of 9/11. They run, they being the Pajaronian, they run various editorial writers from around the country. One of them is a Mr. Gene Lyons, who writes from Little Rock, Arkansas. Another is a, I can't remember a man's first name. His last name is Campos. He is a professor of law in Denver, Colorado. And these two columnists have both recently run columns in which it goes beyond merely stating that President Bush was telling people that Saddam was responsible for 9/11. It ridicules anyone who doesn't believe it. Absolutely, you know, you must be a cult member or something like this. That's a quote from Gene Lyons. There was a political cartoon, the same thing. Here are some screwball theories about 9/11, and there's, you know, the Bush administration did it, and aliens from outer space did it, and there's George Bush saying Saddam Hussein did it. There's only one thing wrong with all this. It's an outright lie. President Bush never claimed Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. Neither did anyone in his administration. Not even once. Now, I'll tell you what. You've heard the opposite from so many places. It's kind of the old big lie technique. Goebbels perfected that, Hitler's propaganda ministry. He said if you tell a lie often enough and just keep repeating it and repeating it, sooner or later it becomes accepted fact. I've seen it happen many times in my life. The first one I really remember was the Tet Offensive back in 1968 and the way we were misinformed about that. It took 25 years for Walter Cronkite to finally come forward and say, yep, we had the story all wrong. Well, thanks, Walter. 25 years late. Well, here's one story that still has some currency. So I tell you what you do. Don't take my word for it. Don't take the Register-Pajaronian's word for it. Do your own damn research. We've got an internet now. You can go back and you can look at the record. Check Mr. Bush's statements. Check Vice President Cheney's statements. Rumsfeld's statements. Whoever you want. Condoleezza Rice. Colin Powell. He was Secretary of State then. You will not find one example of any of these people in the Bush administration, from the president right on down, claiming that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. There has never been any evidence to that effect. Period. If there was, I'd be saying it myself. I don't like Saddam Hussein very much. Was he connected with international terrorism? Absolutely. Of course he was. But was he connected with that particular incident? No, and no one ever said so. So Mr. Bush is finally beginning to get a little bit of redemption, should I say. I notice his popularity is up about 8 points over the past few weeks. And it looks as if the Republicans will not take the projected bath in November election. That's another thing we could talk about today. Here's a couple of other quickies we could talk about. There's a piece here by Thomas Friedman. He writes for the New York Times. Having to do with a tariff. You know what that is, a tax on an import. In this particular case, we, the U.S. government, has imposed a protective tariff, a high tariff, against sugar ethanol from Brazil. Now, those of you, and there are many, particularly in this local community, who are interested in alternate energy sources. We look at ethanol and we say, hey, this is great. We can actually grow energy. There are people who point out the fact, and it is a fact, that Brazil has virtually solved their energy problem through the use of ethanol. And they say, well, why don't we do that here? Well, they're ignoring one important thing. Here we use corn to make ethanol. In Brazil, they don't. They use sugar. And sugar happens to be much more efficient for the production of ethanol than corn is. According to Mr. Friedman's column here, let me see, where is it? Yes. Brazilian sugar ethanol provides 8 times the amount of fossil energy used to make it, while American corn ethanol provides only 1.3 times the energy of the fossil fuel used to make it. See, the process for turning corn or sugar into ethanol requires the use of energy. which way do you get the bigger bang? Obviously, sugar is far more efficient as an energy multiplier in this sense than is corn. And that's why Brazil has succeeded so well with ethanol. A look at the map will show you that the United States of America is in the temperate zone, all between the tropics of Capricorn, all between the Tropic of Capricorn, rather, and the Arctic Circle. Brazil, on the other hand, is entirely within the tropics. The equator practically tracks the Amazon River right across Brazil. Their climate is obviously different. They grow sugar where we grow corn. So what ought we to do? Ought we to impose this huge tariff in order to protect our corn farmers, who can sell their corn other ways, or raise another crop for that matter? Or should we allow the importation of energy from Brazil rather than do what we're doing right now and instead import huge quantities of energy from sheikhs, presidents for life, and other thugs and royalty from the Middle East? This seems to be a no-brainer. Thomas Friedman has a very effective piece. This is in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, so I advise you to turn to your page 11 in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, down at the bottom of the page. Take a look at that column. Of course, I've been a free trade guy all my life, but this one really, really pushed my buttons. Let me see. We have Harold and Aptos on the phone. Let's go ahead and take our first call. If you would like to be our next call, 479-1080 is the telephone number. Harold, welcome to KSCO. Good morning.
Hello, Charlie.
Hi.
Where should we begin? First of all, okay. I have no sympathy for the press because they really blew it big time when they didn't print that picture of Muhammad, you know, with the bombs or something on his head. Do you remember that?
I remember that very well. Yes, the American press did not print those pictures. The only publication I know of to print it, as a matter of fact, I'm a proud subscriber, the Weekly Standard printed them.
Thank you for that, because you understand we have free press, free speech, and people like Thomas Paine or Horace Greeley are turning over in their graves, because I don't care if a Muslim blows me up in downtown Santa Cruz. Me as an individual is not important to those principles, and you show weakness to Islam. And that was cowardly in the press.
Well, we're on solid ground there, Harold. I got to agree with you.
Okay. Part two,
yep.
I begin to think about the spread of Muhammad. And as he was waging his wars between Mecca and Medina on the Arabian Peninsula, he did bring Islam by the sword. So the Pope was right about that. So was this 14th century emperor. And it shows weakness to Islam. And before I get to Catholicism, me and you disagreed last week. As I saw, we agree that Islam was spread over North Africa. But I used the word caliphate. And I should have been, there was a Muslim presence all over Europe for centuries. And I begin to think, because Queen Isabella and Ferdinand were the last two that drove them out of Europe.
Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand, let me see, it was one was from Aragon and the other from Castile, as I remember. And the wedding was an arranged political marriage to unite those two kingdoms.
Yeah,
at that point, the Moors had only a little toehold at the very bottom of the Iberian Peninsula, and it was Ferdinand and Isabella who finally pushed them once and for all the way out of Gibraltar and everything else and into North Africa. So, your history is correct there.
If they financed Christopher Columbus, then you're talking about the 1400s then before finally they were pushed out of Europe. Charles Martel and Charlemagne and the character El Cid was the great warrior in Spain
that helped
drive them out.
Let me see. Of course, Isabella financed Columbus in 1491-1492. The final expulsion of the Moors had been a little bit before that. And also one other thing that Ferdinand and Isabella did, that was they expelled the Jews from Spain.
They did.
Which was not something that we can look back now with approval, but this was one other thing that happened during that reign.
I don't want to get too specific because I could say, well, the Jews could convert to Catholicism, but...
Well, that comes under the classification, again, of a forced conversion, and that is why we look back on that and we're appalled by it.
My main point is that Islam started in 650 A.D. It's had its ebbs and flows, and it's starting to rise again slowly if you look over history in the centuries, and they are a dangerous force. What, they're in the Philippines, Indonesia. I found out they're in Africa also. And there's 100 million of them in China. And the Chinese are controlling them. But 100 million, that's a pretty significant thing. I'm going to ask you about that quote from the president of Pakistan. Do you think Rumi or somebody said that we're going to bomb you back to the Stone Ages? Or is he just making that up because...
No, that quote comes from Curtis LeMay, and it had to do with what he was advocating we do in Vietnam back about 40 years ago. So the bomb somebody back to the Stone Age has no current currency. It is it's a quote of General LeMay and the policy he was advocating toward the Viet Cong.
And you tell me if my history is right. Islam combined with Turkey and the Ottoman Empire and went up and took Constantinople, and that was the height of their power, and then after World War One.
No, they actually went further than Constantinople. If you look at Constantinople, or modern-day Istanbul, that is on the Turkish side of the Bosphorus. Now, if they had merely come that far and not crossed the Bosphorus into the Balkan Peninsula, you would not find that today, for example, Islam is the religion of the Croats, Albanians, the Kosovars, etc., etc. There are still plenty of mosques in the Balkan Peninsula. There are also Catholics there, and there are also Greek Orthodox. So this is one of the reasons the Balkans have always been this fractious area, because not only do you have all these different nationalities contending, but they all have they adhere to different religious faiths. And this has caused a lot of trouble there. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you, Harold, bringing up the current time. What does this mean to us today? Do you see Islam as a force that we are sooner or later going to have to simply go to loggerheads with, or what?
Yeah, because you don't. The audience has to get this. What's the galvanizing glue that holds all these like different types of nationalities and races together? It's the Quran. And whether Sunnis are fighting Shiites or whatever, the Quran... They could, if they get another Saladin, a great leader. Maybe Osama is alive. Maybe he is the modern Saladin. Because if he is alive, they've been chasing him for how many years, and they haven't caught him, so.
There's only one difference. Saladin was really a very bright guy, and Osama appears to be a world-class dope.
You think so?
Oh, wow. God, yes. The whole World Trade Center attack was just industrial strength dumb.
Well, then there's a Saladin, and I'm sure one will come up in Iran, and not this president they got now, obviously, but it could happen.
It could happen, but you've got to bear in mind, Saladin, we remember him today because he was such an exceptional person, and exceptional people of that nature don't crop up very often. They're still waiting.
That's true.
Yeah.
I want to completely change the subject now. Can I do this?
Okay, make it quick.
Okay, it is. I have to comment on this, Charlie, because in Aptos we had a teenager that committed suicide with a handgun, we think. That's what's reported. Did you see the story?
No, I sure didn't.
Okay, now I come from the blue class, blue collar, working class town of Watsonville. And Aptos is upscale. A lot of parents both have college degrees. There's plenty of money here. Your kids have braces on their teeth.
Okay,
the college is paid for.
What are you saying?
So I'm saying I can't understand this kid, these kids of privilege that commit suicide, and I want the audience and you, Charlie, to comment on this.
Okay. Well, I'll let you go, and I'll go ahead and do that. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you very much.
I would say, Harold, that one of the things you've got to bear in mind is that while there are people who commit suicide out of financial woes and lack of, perceived opportunities in their lives and so on and so forth, this is no determinant of depression and suicide. If you look particularly at the numbers on teen suicide, you will find that it doesn't break down according to economic status. That young people who are coming from, to use your own word, advantaged backgrounds, affluent families, etc., are every bit as vulnerable to depression. And this is one of the... I work in the high schools. This is something we talk about. And the idea that, he's poor, he might do this, forget about that. Anybody might, whether they come from an advantaged background or a very poor background. It has to do with a state of mind, mental depression, and that can affect people even when they have all kinds of material well-being. So, yeah, there's no link there. And the fact that this youngster just did that is just one more piece of evidence of it. Let me see here. We've got to take a break. It's half past. I have a couple of people holding, and we will take their calls as soon as we return. You are listening to KSCO in Santa Cruz. I'm Charlie Friedman, sitting in for Michael Zwirling, and we're talking about all kinds of things today. Back in a couple of minutes.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangero. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangero family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Our Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
May I have the attention of all KSCO and KOMY listeners who want to feel good and save money. All others must disregard this message under penalty of law. We are finally having a sale on longevity products at KSCO Radio this Friday and Saturday from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Savings will range anywhere from 20 to 50% for expired but perfectly good products, and for non-sale products purchased, you will receive certain selected free products of your choice. Nobody will walk away mad, with the possible exception of an occasional humorless liberal. This will be an epic event, because the more you spend, the more you will get, and I'm dead serious. Buy a pig pack and receive a free bottle of Vitali, Nature's Way, or Rebound FX. Last chance for the buy three, get one free Slender FX promotion. Why, we'll even let you sample products first, so you don't end up buying something that makes you gag, even though it is good for you. Remember the first and probably last epic longevity product blowout sale this Friday and Saturday from 1 to 6 p.m. at your favorite radio stations, AM 1080 KSCO and AM 1340 KOMY. 2300 Portola Drive in the Lagoon, no, at the Lagoon, in Live Oak. Don't miss it.
And for the win.
Okay, let's see. A popular vacation destination in southern Italy, Quilici.
Oh, sorry. Contestant number two, it's up to you.
Oh, absolutely.
A common name for the endangered East African weaver bird, Quilici.
No. Contestant number three?
Quilici. Why, of course. The name for gardening and landscape services in Santa Cruz County.
Hi, I'm Randy Quilici, owner of Quilici Gardening and Landscaping. It's true, Quilici may be a little hard to pronounce, but it's been a trusted name in the landscape industry since 1982. Call me at 425-5269. I'd love to personally show you some beautiful gardens and landscapes we've created and maintained, and just what we can do for you.
And remember, it's Quilici, the name to know for gardening and landscaping services in Santa Cruz County. 425-5269 or at QuiliciGardening.com.
This is Judy DeVilbiss. Hi, you know what? Back in about March of this year, I actually took a flying leap off of my bicycle and landed right square on my knees and my chest. Thank God I didn't hit my head, but I did really rack up my knee big time. And you know what I did? I didn't go to the doctor. I just came home and started with ice packs, the essential oils, the trauma oil, and every day I rubbed a lot of the CM cream from Longevity. I'm telling you what, the Longevity products are something that can really take care of you. I did this regime probably straight for 4 weeks, and every day I was taking 3 of the CM capsules 3 times a day. I took care of myself, and you know what? Here it is now, and it did take a while, I'll admit, because, hey, you know what? I'm 66 years old. But you know what? I'm back on the bicycle, I'm running races, and I'm feeling great. Get started on the Longevity products. Call 888-352-7500. Thanks.
Sail away on the Chardonnay. Relax as the 70-foot Chardonnay sets sail from the Santa Cruz Yacht Harbor. Enjoy the spectacular views of the bay as the Chardonnay's professional crew entertains you with their impeccable service. Board the Chardonnay for the cruise of your choice. Like the taste of Santa Cruz, the brewmaster and the winemaker. Or how about the romantic sunset sail, the Sunday brunch, or the Wednesday night races? You can even charter the Chardonnay for a company-wide sail away. Sail away on the Chardonnay for only $49.50 per person. The Chardonnay is licensed, insured, and Coast Guard inspected. Reserve your sail away today. Call the Chardonnay at 423-1213. 423-1213. Or log on to Chardonnay.com. That's 423-1213.
And we're back on the radio station here, KSCO Santa Cruz, Charlie Friedman on the Saturday special, sitting in for MZ. Speaking of MZ, we will be hearing from him later in the program. There's been a slight change of plan. It seems that Kay's Whirling, her commentary is going to run at 11:05, and then after that, Michael will have a word or two with you. So for right now, we've been doing a little bit of news talk. You know, there's one other story here that I found that I kind of got a kick out of. In last Friday's, just yesterday, in the San Francisco Chronicle, Walmart stores indicated, or said Thursday, it will sell nearly 300 generic drugs at $4 per prescription, starting this week in Florida. And I can't help but wonder, there's been an awful lot of really vile language out of the left, the political left and the Democrats, about how awful Walmart is. The only thing I regret about Walmart is I've never been to one. There aren't any in Santa Cruz County. I guess the progressive element here has been successful in keeping them out. It strikes me if somebody is willing to sell prescriptions at $4 a pop, that sure beats anything the government is doing or anything anybody else is doing to help keep prescription drug costs down. And the heck of it is, somebody says here that this is just a matter of spin. Well, I'll tell you what. Spin is verbiage, words. It's when you try to, you know, make something sound better or worse. When a company comes out and says, we're going to sell prescriptions at $4 a pop, that is not spin. That is action. And actions speak louder. Back to the telephones at KSCO. If you want to join us, it's 479-1080. Welcome to the radio station, Chris. How you doing?
Oh, great. How are you this morning? Thank you for having me on your radio show.
Not at all, sir.
You know, I was hoping this morning when I heard your opening intro, I was just hoping that you weren't going to say the word Islam, and you did.
The way the news is going these days, it's kind of like Islam is the 800-pound elephant in the corner. It's hard to ignore him.
It's weird. Is that what they want? Do they want to be on the forefront of news? Are they just like paper tigers looking for, you know, some outlet, some venue? They know they can get this crazy liberal American media just to say anything that they do is like front page news. And
Well, the way they've accomplished that, and bear in mind, this is one of the things that changed with the attacks against the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. Up to that time, we, meaning the West and Western media and so on, paid a certain amount of attention to doings in the Middle East and to Islam, etc., etc. Since then, that amount of attention has increased manyfold, and that is why. Now, a few minutes ago when I was talking with Harold, I reflected rather unfavorably on the intelligence of Osama bin Laden. I said that, you know, attacking the World Trade Center was a dumb thing to do. In his particular case, it was. Since then, he's hiding in a cave somewhere. He can't do a damn thing. He can barely survive.
He'd have been better off if he were sitting alone.
The question might be, and Harold could have pointed this out to me, but he was talking about something else at the time, in all fairness. But he could have said, well, now, what was Osama trying to do? Was he trying to promote himself, or was he attempting to draw more attention to Islam? If he was attempting to draw more attention to Islam, he succeeded in doing that.
Right.
However, ask, what about that attention? Is it good or bad?
Well,
I'm fond of saying...
American view, it's horrible. They're really turning me off from their religion.
I agree with that. I'm always fond of saying, I could strip to my skivvies and go down Main Street on a pogo stick.
Yeah.
That would draw attention. But is it necessary the kind of attention I want? Is it positive attention? Obviously not. Now, I believe you're correct. Mm. Islam has taken a terrible black eye from Osama and from Hamas and some of these other organizations. But what has exacerbated that is the fact that, and this is something I hear people say not often enough, where are the voices of moderate, responsible Muslims?
Especially here in this country, I mean, they have so many rights, and that's why they're all coming here. You don't see any of them taking off from here, going back to Iran or Syria or Lebanon or any of those not bad places. I'm really dismayed at some of the leaders, especially this. You know, you never heard one word out of Louis Farrakhan. I mean, this gentleman's sick, we've heard on the news. But all of this, I don't ever remember seeing his face on the news once.
Well,
you know,
there are there are those people in America, and Farrakhan is one of them, who are in league with this because they are so blinded by their anti-Semitism, their sheer hatred of Jews, that they're willing to subscribe to virtually anything.
There they go, see, and just like I wanted to get to the conqueror of Constantinople, Mehmet II, if I could, real quick. He was a gentleman who conquered Constantinople and took it from the Christians in 1453, you know, the last stronghold of the Christians. And when they went in there, they raped, looted, pillaged, they destroyed that place, and then obviously, you know, turned it into what it is today, which is Turkey, Istanbul, Turkey. And he was on a mission. He vowed to take over the world from east to west. He had taken over all of Turkey there.
Now, who are you speaking of right now?
Of Mehmet II.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
You know what I mean?
Go ahead. I just want to make sure I knew where you were. Go ahead.
He had taken over all of Turkey, all of Greece, Bulgaria, all of the surrounding areas in there, and he was on a roll. When he went into Constantinople, they took refuge, as I recall, in a cathedral, a 6th century cathedral called Santa Sophia, the last remaining refuge.
It's still there. It's been turned into a mosque.
Right. He turned it into a mosque.
That's right.
He reconsecrated it and turned it, and it's still there. That was one of my questions to you, because I know you're a great reviewer. I like listening to your great historian. It's still there to this day, isn't it?
Yep, you bet. If you want an account of it, I don't know if you've ever heard of Richard.
And why don't the Christians get mad? Why don't the Catholics get mad? You want to talk about Islam's always screaming about places that the Christians have taken from them. Look at what happened back then when they took over Constantinople.
Oh yeah.
And I could go into, you know, that was one of the, I liked reading about that story, so I know quite a bit about how the Ottoman Empire took it over. And
well, I'll tell you what, Chris. You know, one other thing I would mention to you. Hang on a second. One other thing I would mention to you. When the Islamic wave came into Egypt, one of the things they did, and this, it was interesting, Carl Sagan, of all people, who was certainly not noted as a political conservative,
right,
once wrote a piece in which he regarded the greatest crime in human history as being the burning of the Alexandria Library, which at that time contained records of antiquity unmatched anywhere in the world. And the Muslims came in and said, well, this isn't consistent with the Quran, with Muhammad, and Muhammad can stand without it, so they torched the whole thing.
Sure.
And, you know, the loss to humanity of records of just going way, way back, hundreds of years, centuries, was incredible. So this is, and in all fairness, Christian conquerors used to do the same kind of thing.
Sure.
But it seems that Christianity no longer operates in this fashion, whereas, I'll tell you what, if the Muslims, if Hamas and Hezbollah were successful in rolling Israel into the sea, as they want to do, you would see a wave of rape, pillage, and arson, the like of which you haven't seen in years, and that and this would be right now in the present day. Listen, I got to move on. I got other callers.
Hey, thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Appreciate your calling. Let's keep moving on. We've got plenty of other people on the phone right now. Clint, how are you today? Hello, Clint.
Hello.
Ah,
Charlie.
Hi there. Sorry to keep you waiting. What's going on, brother?
Oh, nothing. I was just listening to this conversation about the threat from Islam.
You know, I find more and more, I'm talking to people, and after the requisite number of drinks, I'll always ask them, you know, just calm down for a second. Say, do you think that sooner or later, the Western world and Islam are actually going to wind up having a real, honest-to-God, cataclysmic, balls-to-the-wall showdown? And I find more and more people, I'm not talking about just conservatives, believe me, most of my friends, as a matter of fact, virtually all of them are on the political left. And yet they'll think for a few minutes and they'll say, you know, that's probably what's going to happen sooner or later.
Really? Why?
They see...
We're right and they're wrong?
No. That's not these people's mindset. Their mindset rather is that the Islamic world is implacable.
Oh, and they're threatening us to take away our land.
They're threatening us to take away not just our land, but our entire civilization, et cetera, et cetera. And
the whole world,
if you listen to what the Muslims say, this is a very easy analysis to make, because they clearly state, you know, your society, your Christian, Judeo-Christian society, it's decadent, it's lawless, they even call it godless from time to time when they're really trying to be insulting. And we will wipe this out. The sword of Islam will cut clean. And, you know, you listen to this kind of rhetoric and you're thinking to yourself, geez, how do you reason with that guy? How do you reason with an Osama bin Laden? I don't believe you do.
Wait a second now. Osama bin Laden. He's been attacking us for quite a while.
He has. He finally got our attention on September 11, 2001. But
the coal bombing really brought him to my attention.
Clint, I'm agreeing with you. You got to pay attention. What I said was he finally got our attention on September 11, 2001, but he had been attacking us for years prior to that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about Osama is he represents no country. He represents no mass of Islam, the Muslim world. He's basically a organized criminal with a gang around him.
That's true.
Now, look, back in through our decades here in America, there's been an organization called the Mafia. Mafia has done horrendous things, drug dealing, murder, extortion, things that you would call terrorist acts. But we have never, ever advocated invading Italy.
Well, there's the old saw, all the Mafia members are Italian, but not all Italians are Mafia members. Both statements, of course, are true. Here's the difference. In the Islamic world today, and this boils down to something that Chris and I were talking about just a moment ago. Where are the voices of moderate Islam getting up and saying Osama bin Laden is a crazy man? He's a criminal with a criminal gang, just as you described him a couple of moments ago. You were telling the truth. But you don't hear that language out of the leaders of the various Islamic nations, even the secular ones that are supposedly aligned with the West. You don't hear that kind of language out of, for example, President Mubarak of Egypt. You don't hear that kind of language out of Assad of Syria. You don't hear that kind of language even out of the royal family of Saudi Arabia, at least not until they started getting terrorist attacks in their own country. That kind of brought them around a bit. But right now in Indonesia, there's a tremendous battle going on. Indonesia has a larger Muslim population than any other country in the world. You probably know that.
Yeah, and they have Christians, they have Buddhists, and they have Hindus.
But
much a diverse condition like most of the world is becoming.
They are, and there are a significant number of Muslims in that country who want to change that. And what they are working hard to do is to implement strict Sharia law in Indonesia and place anyone in that country who is not a Muslim in a subordinate position. Now, granted, that movement has not been successful, but to say that it's just one or two guys is also erroneous. There are serious numbers of Indonesian Muslims who are attempting to accomplish this. And what I am looking at is there's a struggle for the Muslim world between people of reason and people of fanaticism. And I see the fanatics on the move, and I don't see the people of reason in the Islamic world doing much of anything. I don't even see them giving lip service. I would like to see that. That if you ask me what I want for Christmas, okay, I'll tell you. I would like to see responsible, decent Muslims all over the world get up and say, we are not down with this.
I've heard them say it constantly. I don't know why you don't hear it, but I've heard it.
Where?
Through the experts and the scholars of the Muslim traditions.
So your criticism then would be that for one reason or another,
he represented nobody. We're using him as a straw dog to try and drum up a fear of a religion that is as successful as any on this planet. Religion is, here's a parable. We all stare into that campfire. That campfire is blinding bright. It is the mystery.
Ruins your night vision, too.
We all see that same campfire. And how we interpret it has come across as Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism, and Muslim.
Okay.
And Islam.
Do you recognize then hold on a second. I got a question for you. Do you recognize that among the Muslim population today, there are a significant number, not just a few, but a significant number...
Of malcontents?
No, of fanatics.
Oh, fanatics.
Fanatics.
Makes it sound really scary.
It is scary. A fanatic is somebody who wants to impose his or her...
It's scary for people that are fearful themselves.
I am...
If you're fearful, you will be scared. But there's...
Hold on a second, damn it. Are you willing to concede that there are times when being scared is reasonable?
To rain down on another religion... We're not respecting
Okay, are you listening to me at all? I asked you a question. Will you respond to it, please?
Give it.
Give the question.
Yeah.
The question is it reasonable sometimes to be scared? Is fear sometimes reasonable?
Is fear sometimes reasonable?
Yes.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Well, having said that, we've arrived now at a total impasse because I believe that sometimes fear is reasonable. I want to thank you for the call, though. I appreciate it.
Well,
have a good day.
Keep on being...
There are certain things I am afraid of. In the 1930s, it was proper to be afraid of Hitler. Today, it is proper to be afraid of Muslim fanaticism. To simply say, this too shall pass, I'm sorry, sir, I cannot agree with you on that. Not any way in the world. Larry, how are you today, sir?
I'm okay. How are you?
You're calling all the way from up in Fremont, huh?
I am.
How's the signal, or are you listening on the net?
My streaming thing doesn't work. Yeah, I'm listening on the radio.
How's it coming in?
Not that good, actually.
Oh, dear.
It's kind of in and out.
Well, I'll quit wasting your time. What did you want to say?
I also wanted to talk about, I forget the word you just used for extremist Islam.
I use the word fanatics.
It's a danger. Let's call fanatic Islam. I agree it's a real danger. And I agree we should do something about it. My problem is that the approach that the right wing and the folks that usually are up in arms about the evil jihadists out to get us is a bad approach. It's not going to work. It's going to make it worse, much, much worse. We want to be smart. We want to fight. We want to fight Islamic extremism in the smart way.
Well, Larry, I don't think anyone could possibly disagree with the idea.
Well, people do.
Hang on a second. I don't see how any.
Just want to,
Larry,
just
hang.
Want
hang
to hit him in the head.
Larry, wait.
They
Larry, please, hang on a second. I don't see how anybody could disagree with the idea of confronting something in a smart way. What I want to know is, how do you define a smart way? In other words, what ought we to do according to you?
Okay. First of all, I want to clarify. I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about coddling them. I'm not, though I'm sure you're going to say that that's what I'm saying. I'm not talking about coddling with them, negotiating with them, anything like that. In fact,
well, Larry, hang on a second. We've only got so much time. Don't tell me what you don't want. Tell me what you do want.
Clarify, because you're going to say that that's what I'm saying.
I may surprise you. I don't like it when people do that to people.
Okay.
I will not misconstrue your words into something that you didn't say and then cut down that straw. When people do that to me, I get pissed.
Good. You're a good talk show host. Okay, good.
So what, come on now, what do you think we ought to do?
Okay, what we need to do is generally tamp down the level of violence. We gotta root out the term is often used, drain the swamp. We got to root out the causes of Islamic extremism. Historically, and we can't do anything about this now, but historically, there was no Islamic extremism until roughly the 19th century. By the way, the thing you said about the destruction of the temple of the Library of Alexandria by the Muslims, totally bogus. It was a complicated event, and certainly it decayed. The library slowly decayed as Hellenistic culture decayed. But generally, the main destruction took place in the 4th century. That's agreed on. I've studied this period a lot. I was a history major in college.
I tell you what I'll do. I'll revisit it. But
yeah.
the name Harun al-Rashid comes to mind.
Yeah. What?
And the name Harun al-Rashid comes to mind.
I don't know who that Harun.
I believe he was the guy who ordered the torching. Now,
yeah.
Hang on a second. Let me talk for a second, will you? I was just going to say, I don't know for sure if that's the story or not. This comes to, you know, I read these books a long time ago.
Yeah, but rather than
getting into a discussion about the Library at Alexandria, which happened many years ago.
Well, you just used that as an arguing point, though, and I'm pointing out that it's not true.
Well, I could also, the Islam, a Muslim could come up and say, well, you guys conducted the Inquisition. And that would be true also, but that's a long time ago. Now, the Pope, when he made those remarks, he quoted somebody who was speaking 600 years ago. Let's try to bring ourselves into the current situation.
Well, I just wanted
now,
to say-
you suggested that
okay.
we, you used the phrase, we ought to drain the swamp. We ought
yep.
to address the causes of Islamic fanaticism.
Yes.
I'd like to know what you see as those causes.
Well, historically, the causes are Western imperialism. And we can't do anything about that now. The damage has been done. The extremists are going to be with us for a long time. What we need to do now is just generally tamp down the level of violence, encourage democracy. The way you encourage democracy, by the way, is not by conquering a country and forcing them to be democratic. Just leave them alone. What we need to do is not send any money into the Middle East at all. Let all those dictators we support their fall. Saudi Arabia, Kuwait.
So you're Egypt, saying that
let
we
let them fall. Let them all fall.
So you're saying that. Hang on a second.
Money to Israel.
Hang
we're,
on.
We're ludicrously. We're
damn it. Nobody wants to listen or respond to a question. Everybody just wants to filibuster this morning. Okay, Larry, what I'm going to ask you, and I hope you're listening because you should be, what I'm going to ask you is if we quit giving money to the Middle East, that means that we stop buying their oil. Now, that would probably, at least in the short term, hurt us more than them.
We have a lot of oil.
Are you advocating that?
We have a lot of oil.
We have a lot. We don't have as much as we need.
What I'm talking about is not giving them stuff. We can still trade with them. If we need to.
Okay. So you're not advocating a cut off. You're not advocating a trade embargo. You're simply advocating that we stop giving them any kind of foreign aid.
Partners. We can find suitable trade partners in the Middle East. We don't have to, but we should.
Will you hang on a second? I just asked you another question, and you didn't hear it. You've got to stop now and again. I asked you, you're not advocating a trade embargo then. Are you advocating that we stop giving any of these countries any sort of foreign aid?
Absolutely.
The only Middle Eastern country, well, of course, the biggest foreign aid recipient in the world is Israel. The only other country that we give anywhere near that kind of foreign aid to is Egypt, which is an Arab nation in the Middle East.
We
do not give foreign aid to Saudi Arabia. We do not give foreign aid to Kuwait or any of these other oil-rich nations.
No, that's not true. It might not be called foreign aid, but we have extensive military cooperation with them that helps them secure their dictatorship. These are the worst kind of theocracies. These are places where I couldn't even set foot there because I'm a Christian. I couldn't even set foot in these places. What do we do supporting these places? Let freedom, let democracy reign. Let freedom reign all over the Middle East. Just leave it alone, and the people will eventually. They might go through a theocratic stage, but that won't be much fun. They won't enjoy. They're not going to want to elect a bunch of mullahs to tell them what to do.
Okay, Larry, I appreciate your call and making the point. I've got to break. It's the top of the hour, but thank you for calling. Again, it's interesting. If you call to the program, be ready to at least do some listening, just a little bit, because otherwise it gets really, really tiresome for me. Now, he had some interesting points to make, but, you know, I'm trying to ask him a couple of questions to bring him out, and he won't permit it. Okay, it's 11 o'clock. This is KSCO Santa Cruz. I am Charles Friedman. I'll be back with you several minutes. We're going to have the news. We're going to have Kay's Whirling's comment, and then we'll have MZ on the air with you. So I'll talk to you again. Let's see, probably about 11 past or something like that. The phone number here is 479-1080. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back with you presently.
Your source for news, sports, traffic, and weather. AM 1080, KSCO, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Salinas, and Monterey.
Fox News. News Radio, I'm Karen Stewart. Is Osama bin Laden dead? The French said yes, in a newspaper report anyway.
The newspaper L'Est Républicain quotes what it says is a confidential French government report saying Saudi Arabia believes bin Laden succumbed to typhoid last month and that the Saudis are waiting for more details before going public. A senior U.S. intelligence official says he has no evidence to back that and strongly doubts the report's accuracy. Bin Laden is believed to be hiding out in the rugged mountainous region along the Afghan-Pakistan border. The leaders of both countries will meet with President Bush in Washington next week, with the hunt for bin Laden certainly to be on the agenda. In Washington, Nick Simeone, Fox News Radio.
The source claims that Osama bin Laden died of typhoid, but a U.S. intelligence official tells Fox News there is no evidence to prove that bin Laden is dead or even dying. Even French President Jacques Chirac is asking his defense minister to investigate how the document wound up being published. More al-Qaeda captures as a man said to be the leader of a group tied to al-Qaeda, captured by Iraqi and U.S. forces. Muntasir al-Jubari and two of his aides arrested yesterday, and a man seen on a video executing a Turkish hostage being identified now as the current leader of al-Qaeda. The video dates from 2004, but it's the first time that the al-Qaeda leader has been identified as the killer in that video. A Sunni Arab extremist group claiming responsibility for a deadly attack in Baghdad.
Iraqi police say the bomb was hidden in a barrel and blew up a kerosene tanker.
Fox's David Piper, at least 37 people killed. Boston Citgo sign. The locals call it the Neon God, a Fenway Park favorite for 70 years. But now some want it covered up or removed altogether in boycott of Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez. This week, Chavez outraged many U.S. leaders by calling President Bush the devil. Citgo is an American company, but it was bought by Venezuela's National Oil Company in 1990. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Hi, I'm Linda Ellerbe. Did you know that every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news she has breast cancer? I got it 11 years ago, and I know how scary it can be. Everything your doctor says sounds like a foreign language. HER2-new, oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options, and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. The first place to go the minute you find you have breast cancer, breastcancer.org.
President Bush has used his weekly radio address to praise U.S. allies for their work in defeating terrorism. In the Democratic response, Democrats are warning that Republicans will revive their effort to overhaul Social Security right after the November elections.
When Republicans say they are going to reform Social Security, they mean they are going to privatize it. And by privatizing it, they'll cut the guaranteed monthly benefit we have promised generations of Americans.
That's congressional candidate Ed Perlmutter from Colorado. Perlmutter says the plan is dangerous and would cut benefits to senior citizens. Meanwhile, this week the president will hold several meetings with the leaders of Afghanistan and Pakistan, including an Oval Office meeting with both on Wednesday. More severe weather expected today in Arkansas, a day after a woman was struck and killed by lightning and another reportedly drowned after a series of severe storms. The National Weather Service is forecasting high winds, hail, and possibly tornadoes in the nation's heartland. One of two twisters in St. James, Missouri, ripped part of the roof off a middle school. And in Illinois, high winds destroyed more than a dozen homes in Massac and Jackson counties. It's going to be difficult putting out the massive wildfires in Southern California thanks to the Santa Ana winds, basically adding fuel to the fire. Firefighters spent the week building fire lines in an attempt to protect three towns. Ojai and other towns a few miles from the day fire remain under a low-level evacuation alert while the fires are being treated. The Louisiana Superdome getting back to business more than a year after Katrina. The big party in the Big Easy will be for Monday Night Football when the New Orleans Saints host the Atlanta Falcons. And Lou Diamond Phillips, best known for his role as Richie Valens in the movie La Bamba, has been charged with domestic battery in a fight with his girlfriend. The papers were filed in Los Angeles. Phillips faces up to 1 year in jail, also a $2,000 fine if he's convicted of the misdemeanor count of domestic battery. Lou Diamond Phillips arraignment is set for October 18th. I'm Karen Stewart, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us here at AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. We are your source for red hot news talk on the Central Coast. We are also broadcasting worldwide at www.ksco.com. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather forecast for today, Saturday, September 23rd, 2006. Today you can expect sunny conditions with highs around 80 degrees and winds north-northeast at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear with lows around 52 degrees. Tomorrow will be sunny with highs around 80 degrees. And tomorrow night, mostly clear with lows around 53 degrees. The Monterey Bay Boaters forecast for today, northeast winds 5 knots, becoming west in the afternoon with wind waves 1 foot or less and a northwest swell 4 to 9 feet at 10 seconds and southwest 1 to 2 feet at 14 seconds. Tonight out there on the bay, you can expect west winds 5 to 10 knots, becoming east after midnight and wind waves 1 to 2 feet with a northwest swell 3 to 7 feet at 10 seconds and southwest 1 to 2 feet at 14 seconds. The temperature here at the station is 65 degrees, and it's time to take you back to the Saturday special with your host, Charlie Friedman.
Following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay's Whirling.
Added to the countless criticisms about everything our president attempts to do for democracy in Iraq, now there's an uproar in Congress about our military's so-called inhumane treatment of captured enemy combatants. Most recently, our military used the persuasion of keeping a high-level captured combatant in a very cold room, sleep-deprived for some time, and forced to listen to loud music. Valuable information was obtained. President Bush has asked our Congress to interpret Common Article No. 3 of the Geneva Conventions, which loosely defines proper treatment of captured enemy combatants. Not for one second do the Islamic fascists concern themselves with the Geneva Convention. They laugh at those rules, and more often than not, our captured soldiers are either tortured or annihilated on the spot. Some in Congress are more concerned about our world image than they are about the welfare of our fighting military, who deal with these barbaric animals on a daily basis. Is a good world image more important than protecting our soldiers? As long as half of our Congress, mostly the Democrats, and the media keep putting politics above winning in Iraq, our side will continue to lose soldiers. In retrospect, nobody could have predicted that every terrorist in the world would converge in Iraq to prevent democracy from taking hold there. We have one elected commander-in-chief, and that is President George Bush. We don't need the entire Congress running the war. So, complainers, back off. Let the president do his job. Stop with your political whining. You're hurting your country and helping the enemy, and that's called treason. As a response addendum to a few passionate listeners who believe in free speech at any cost, does one not agree that when one's country is in a war to preserve one's free way of life, some restraint is in order if one's free speech gives information to the enemy that could hurt the country? Isn't it possible that unconditional free speech could be the dark side of freedom? For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay's Whirling.
And we're back on the Saturday special. Charles Friedman here. Thank you very much, Kay. And we need some phone calls. 479-1080 is the telephone number. There was one fellow who had called from Salinas wanting to talk about Walmart. I hope he calls back again. If he does, he goes right to the head of the line. The last couple of callers in the last hour, you get these callers occasionally, and they start, they'll make a point, and then they'll keep hammering and hammering and hammering on the same point, rather than pausing to draw a breath and listen, because what I try to do here, if you're making a point in that fashion, I'll try to draw you out. I'm going to ask some questions. I want to make sure that I understand exactly what you're saying. I try not to indulge in, setting up straw men and then knocking them down. As I said, when people do that to me, I don't like it. So I try to follow the golden rule. I try to treat other people the way I like to be treated when I'm having some kind of a conversation. Now, Larry made one point. He said that he thought that Islamic fanaticism today was as a reaction to Western imperialism. I would take issue with that. And I wish you were still on the phone and were willing to listen, because I would have said I would take issue with that. The only difference between Western imperialism and Islamic imperialism is a matter of an opportunity. Where Islam has had the ability to be imperialistic, they have done so. Witness the spread of Islam across Africa, into Europe, etc., etc. They were just as interested in pushing their borders as Westerners were interested in pushing theirs. So to say Western imperialism, well, that's kind of the pot calling the kettle black in this sense, because both parties had imperialistic ambitions and abilities and accomplishments. So I would tend to question that. One thing he did not do, and I compliment him for this, he didn't say, well, it's because they're so poor, because he obviously is well enough informed to know that guys like Osama bin Laden and these other real fanatics, most of them are not poverty stricken. These are well-to-do people. So to say that, they're malcontents because they, never had the proverbial pot to you-know-what in. And again, he didn't say that, although I do hear it from other people. So compliments to Larry for not going there. But when I asked him, what do you think is the cause? He said, we have to be smart. We have to attack the cause. What is the cause? Western imperialism, he says. Now, I don't think so. What is the cause of Islamo-fascism, Islamic fanaticism? I would think that you might answer that by, what is the cause of some people being Christian fanatics? For example, when I look at those people who go out and bomb abortion clinics or attack people who perform abortions, attempt to murder them, and I'm shaking my head going, how in the world can you be so twisted, so bent? That's crazy. You can't do that. But some people arrive at this just, I don't know where their mind is, I can't comprehend it. My thoughts just don't run in that direction, and madness is foreign to me. But to say that it's foreign to Islam, of course, is crazy. That's not true at all. But it seems that in the modern world, there are a lot more Muslims willing to accept this. And I look at the teachings of Muhammad and the way they're interpreted by some people, particularly the Wahhabi sect in Saudi Arabia, and I see that, there's not just a few people. There's a whole sect, several of them, that are dedicated to this type of fanaticism. It's not doing anybody any good. Let's see here. We've got, I think, MZ. Hello there. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Charlie?
I'm fine. Thank you very much, sir.
Hey, it was nice to hear, I know it irritated you, but that caller, Larry, he used to call a lot. He was our token liberal caller, and I wish we had a lot more of them, but he was gone for years, and I tuned in. I was listening on the Internet. I said, that's a familiar voice.
Well, he called from Fremont.
Yeah, Larry from Fremont. Yeah, for some reason he stopped calling for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, and I'd recognize that voice anywhere. So.
I'm glad he called. I hope he calls again, but I hope he's in more of a mood to listen.
Right, yeah, I don't remember him being that all-encompassing, taking over of the conversation and not listening as he was.
Maybe that's because he hasn't called for 7 years and he's got all this bottled up inside of him and he needs to let it all out at once.
That might be it. Hey, listen, I just wanted to call and give a promo for the Youngevity product blowout sale that we're having at the radio station today.
Everything must go!
Saturday, come and get it.
Where's that echo chamber when we need it?
Right.
Hey, Dave, what can you do here?
In any case, I got an email. I haven't talked with Jimmy Sullivan, who's putting on this great sale for us, but I got an email from her saying that yesterday just went fabulously well, and a lot of people went away with smiles on their face, and nobody went away with a scowl on their face, as it says in the ad. But because the ad says this Friday and Saturday, I didn't want people to be confused. It's today. Today is the Saturday of the this Friday and Saturday from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. It's a great time to come down to the radio station, and we're holding the sale in the garage there, and it's a wonderful opportunity to, sample some of the products. And we've got some really good prices, and it's sort of an inventory reduction sale. So wanted to let everybody know that it's a great chance to do that. And, heck, you might – well, are you still going to be around at 1 o'clock? Probably not.
Well, by that time, I'll probably be over in Watsonville enjoying the sunshine and playing a couple of good records.
Oh, well, you could always hang out so that people – so that another reason for people to come and go attend the sale would be to see what you look like.
Are you suggesting I present myself as a target?
No, I mean, people love you. People love you whenever you're on. See, this is terrible. I can feel your head inflating right now. But when people hear you on the radio, they say, "No, that's a quality talk show host." And so, and when they hear the rest of us, they say, "No, those guys are pretty good." And then when they come and see us at a business fair or something like that, you could just see the that's what that guy looks like. Yuck. So it's a big letdown. Great face for radio, but you're the exception here. So anyhow, if all you're going to do is
playing records,
you should hang out and talk with your fans who will probably show up.
I'll have to go out and buy a new pair of trousers. These have got holes in the knees. Look like okay. I just walked in from doing the garden.
Well, thanks, Charlie, and thanks for filling in today. Appreciate it.
Not at all. And let's give those particulars again. Today, blowout sale of Dr. Wallach's products?
Yes, the Youngevity products.
And this happens today at 1 o'clock.
These are brand new products. If you want to get an incredible deal, you can get some expired products. But minerals don't really expire. In fact, they remain the same through the ages.
Yeah, rocks tend to last.
Right. From 5 hours today, from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m.
Right here on the shores of beautiful Corcoran Lagoon.
At 2300 Portola Drive. So make it on down. It's a wonderful opportunity to try the products that you've been meaning to and get them at a pretty good deal, too.
Hey, Michael.
So take care.
When are you going to fix the neon lights out front?
Oh, hopefully. I don't know whether we're ever going to fix the neon because, the last time I checked, it's like $50,000 a lineal inch to fix neon.
Holy guacamole. I thought it was expensive. I had no idea.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But Dennis from Day and Night came up with sort of a neat idea about using, light rope or something like that. And the effect is almost the same. But if there is anybody out there who knows about neon and won't charge $50,000 per lineal inch to fix it, I'd like to talk to that person. Shoot me an email, mz@ksco.com, because you're absolutely right. I mean, why have those things?
Got to get those things spruced up. They look great in the night. They really do.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm old enough to remember.
You worked at KSCO years ago, right?
1978.
Wow. Hey, you're there almost as long as Billy, huh?
Almost. Well, listen, thanks a lot for calling. Enjoy the surf. You're on Oahu right now, kicking back.
Yeah.
So have a good one, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks, Charlie. Have a good one.
Bye-bye, MZ. MZ promoting the sale of Dr. Wallach's products, longevity products. That'll start at 1 o'clock here at the radio station, so come down and save some money. We've got about, we got plenty of time left, 40 minutes. So, time now for some callers. 479-1080 is the telephone number. We've been talking about Islam. We can talk about other things. I raised a bunch of other things. That mumbling jackass from Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, who bloviated all over the UN the other day. This tax on imported ethanol, which I think is absurd. Walmart, which I would like to see a Walmart around here. Geez, and now they're going to sell prescription drugs, generic drugs, at $4 a prescription. This is their answer to high drug prices. And yet still we hear people, particularly on the left, telling us how awful Walmart is. I'm sorry, I cry BS. And, of course, we can talk about the president if you want to, how he seems to be fighting back a bit, recovering a bit of his appeal. Let's see here. We have Lou in Aptos as our first caller. Lou, thank you for calling us. Welcome to KSCO.
Hi, Charlie. Hey, got a lighter story that fits along the topic with a serious preamble here. That's
shoot.
Right.
Yeah.
The serious preamble is, like with what Rosie said, and you were talking also about the right-wing extremists that blow up abortion clinics and so on.
Yeah, exactly.
And she said they're just as dangerous as Islamic extremists. One thing about the those that do that, they're usually not a member of a church. It's more of a political thing, and they identify themselves as being for God. But when you look into their background, they're not a part of a church. They're just nobody's going to tell them what to do. They're like a wild cannon. So anyway, now on to the lighter thing. Years ago, I went to San Jose State. That was in the 70s when they had some of the Black Power movement and so on.
Sure.
And so I was a brand new on the campus, coming from Cabrillo, and there were people handing out these newspapers. They were like kind of a violent Nation of Islam stuff.
Okay.
Which was, you know, really kind of racist and so on. And
you think?
Yeah. So I'm going along, and this guy was, you know, handing these out, and I thought, well, I'm just a new kid on this big old campus, and I want to get along, so I took it, and the guy said, hey, that's a quarter. And I go, well, I didn't have a quarter. Sorry, here, have a good day, you know, and went on my way. I'm thinking, wow, this is what it's going to be like here. So I go into my room, and I haven't even met my dorm mate yet.
Yeah.
And on the bed is one of those papers, and I thought, oh, boy, this is going to be a rough semester.
I'm getting this premonition.
So I'm sitting there at the desk, and all of a sudden the door's starting to open up, and I go, oop. I turned around and look, and here's this nice little short guy that came through the door. He's Indian, and he was Muslim. Apparently the people at the dorm wanted to put together people for great conversations, and I had just become a Christian just about 8 months before.
Mm-hmm.
And I put that on there as a real important thing in my life. And, of course, this person was Muslim. And so they put us together, and we had some great discussions. He said, I asked him about the newspaper. He said, he's not true Muslim. We had great friendships and great discussions, and he said, you would be a good Muslim, Lou. And I said, Muhammad, you would be a good Christian. During Ramadan, which is actually starts today,
yes.
You know, they fast during the day, and so Muhammad would go out, he'd buy stuff and eat before the sun came up.
Sure.
So here I'd be sleeping in the dorm.
Yeah.
And I call it the miracle of Ramadan because his cornflakes were never crunchy at 5:30 in the morning. And he had apples and celery, you know, and so on. But we had great discussions. And one thing, there was a book that I had about learning about different religions. And I said, could you see what it says about Islam and tell me what you think? He said, it's very true, except the jihad, it's not violence. But I could see how people could interpret it. So I think that's where we are today, is that it doesn't have to be interpreted as violent, but people are taking it as violent. And so,
have you maintained any contact with Muhammad since your college days?
We did somewhat and then lost contact.
Oh, okay.
He was an engineer from India. And the interesting thing is,
the reason I ask is because I would be very interested in knowing what his view is of Islamic fanaticism today. I would think that he would be appalled by it.
Yes, he was a real peaceful guy. And he was actually, they were persecuted by the Hindus there. The Muslims were there.
Yeah, India is a country that's about 70% Hindu and about 30% Muslim. And the Muslims in India are persecuted, as are the Hindus who happen to be in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, this is one of my, don't get me started on Gandhi and all that. The only time India, the subcontinent, ever had anything approaching peace was when the British came in and enforced British law and said, you know, you are going to respect the rights of everybody. And then, you know, the violence began and got worse and worse throughout the 20th century. And finally, the British said, we wash our hands of India. And, of course, Gandhi was one of the leaders. He was a man of nonviolence, of course, and that's absolutely true. But what he did not see was that when the British Raj lifted, the first thing that would happen was that the whole subcontinent would be plunged into horrible violence. And when that did happen, Gandhi actually publicly stated, he says, I cannot believe what I am seeing. I don't understand this. It makes no sense. He was convinced that when the British left, all the problems would go away. And exactly the opposite happened. And, of course, one of the first people who was killed in that first wave of violence, Gandhi himself, was assassinated.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm a hopeless Anglophile, but what the heck. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate you telling your little story about your college roommate. It sounds like you had a real good experience there. Probably learned more from him than you did from some of your professors.
Yeah. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Lou. That's an interesting story. I'm glad he called. Why don't you be the next person I'm glad who called? It's, let me see, it's almost half past. We'll take one more call before we do the break. Dave in the Pinnacles, welcome to KSCO.
Well, hi, Charlie. Hey, Charlie, I'd like to rebut the first assertion you made about it not being a Republican vote, you know, bloodbath here in November. I don't have to go far to point to an example. We just can go back at June and look at Arnold Schwarzenegger getting his butt just totally wiped out. And what I really want to say is look at this Republican district, District 50, this Duke Cunningham replacement election.
Yeah.
And well, for a second, Charlie, that district, Republican.
Dave, you're breaking up rather badly. Are you on a cell phone, sir?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, can you do something that might help the connection a little bit? Because you're very hard to understand.
Oh, is this any better here?
Let's go ahead and try with it.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to say this Bilbrey race, you know, he went back east and was sworn in. They whisked him away and sworn him in 16 days before the election was certified. And when the Busby camp finally filed a lawsuit in California Superior Court, the administrative, the Republican-controlled Congress, the rubber-stamped Congress that we have, wrote this judge a letter saying to dismiss it because it had no founding because he was already sworn in.
Okay.
And I just like to say, I don't care what party you're in, Charlie.
Dave.
If you put up with crap like
Dave,
that.
Dave, hold on a second.
Yeah?
There was no question about, now, you can make the point that Bill Bray didn't win that election by an awful lot. A district like that should be expected to go Republican by a larger margin. However, at the end of the day, there was no need for a recount. It was very clear who had won and who had lost. Mr. Bilbray went back to Washington and got sworn in, and the Congress judges the qualifications of its own members. If you want one that'll really make you mad, here's something I can share with you.
Wait, sir.
This happened about, let me see.
I contest your last statement.
This happened. Oh, no, it's true. The Congress does judge the qualifications of its own members.
You listen to me for a moment, sir. Those election machines, those electronic machines, were illegally taken, and the chain of custody was broken. And it was an illegal election, Charlie. How can you discount the fact? And you know that's a fact.
I don't agree with that. No, I don't agree with that at all.
Well, it's a fact. Charlie, you can go to the website right now. The Register of Voters of San Diego County freely admitted it. It's on videotape, Charles.
I don't agree with you.
It's on videotape. Go to the website.
Okay, if that's the case, then let me ask you this. We've got an election coming up in November. I assume you plan to vote.
I plan to vote and protest.
Okay. When the votes are counted, are you prepared to accept the results of the election, whatever it might be?
There is nothing that I can do. All I can do is tell you, sir, that these electronic machines can be rigged and has been demonstrated time and time again.
Dave, you're breaking up again. Can you do something?
I'm just sorry. I can't. It's
that's
just,
a little better. Okay, that's a little better.
It upsets me that our elections aren't honored and they're clouded, Charles. That's what really bothers me.
I'll tell you what. The questionable elections have been going back long before you and I were born. But the simple fact of the matter is that in 99.9% of cases, at the end of the day, the person who got the most votes is the one who winds up serving. There have been exceptions. I do not for an instant believe that the Bill Bray-Busby election is one of those exceptions. I can point out a couple to you. There was a case in Indiana. This went back about 15, 20 years. There was a Democratic congressman, and he was challenged by a Republican named Hostetler. The Democrat's name was, oh, geez, it escapes me just now. At any rate, the Indiana Secretary of State certified the Republican the winner by some just tiny margin. It was like 28 votes. It was one of those real cliffhanger things. Well, the Democratic House at that time simply seated the Democrat and ignored the election results. And that's one that the Republicans are still, you know, you talk to anybody whose memory goes back that far, they're still enraged about it. Because the Democratic House simply, they seated the guy who actually lost. They just didn't care.
It's like murder. There are no statutes of limitations. This is an outrageous aggression against our free system.
Well, I suggest if you, let me see, you're calling from the Pinnacles. I believe that's San Benito County, isn't it?
No, I'm over the line. I'm in Monterey.
You're in Monterey County.
Yeah, and okay. Let me point this out. Our own register in Monterey County is under a felony indictment. I mean, this is just over the top, Charles. Our own register of voters of Monterey County, he resigned, Tony Ashendo, under felony indictment.
Who's the new one?
I don't know. It's so upsetting. Who can keep track? It's like we're halfway around the world talking about freedom. And right here, our own elections are just so circumvented, it's just unbelievable. Well, anybody can go to blackboxvote.com, and you can read all about the crooked machines. And let me tell you something, Charlie. The Republicans are knee-deep in this business. Just go to blackboxvote.com. You'll read all about it.
Dave, I tell you what. You go ahead and think so. I can't stop you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. I'm sorry. I don't go along with it. Granted, I've seen some. You want to talk about a vote chiggle? How about what happened up in Washington State just last year when the Democrats kept finding votes and finding votes and finding votes until they finally found enough to elect their candidate for governor and then closed the count? That was just unbelievable. But nobody mentions that one. At any rate, this whole business of, oh, you awful fellow. Well, go out and win a few more votes. That's the only tip I can give you on that. We've got Joe and Salinas coming up in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to take my break first. It's just a little bit past 11:30. You're in tune with KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Charlie Friedman. The telephone number is 479-1080, and I've only got one caller on hold, so why don't you go ahead and join us here on the radio station. Back in a couple.
Hadassah helps Israel. Violence and terrorism have driven thousands of children and families from their homes in northern Israel to the safety and security of Hadassah's youth villages. Help Hadassah. Call 1-866-229-2395. It takes dollars to provide critical care along with trained staff and shelter. Please help Hadassah. Help these people. If you'd like to help Hadassah, call 1-866-229-2395. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Adolfo Garcia, owner of Community Tree Service. We offer dumpster rentals, tree work, demolition, and free estimates. For any of these services, please go ahead and call my office and either talk to Regina or Naomi at 763-2391. Thank you.
Are trees around your house looking strange, leaning in the wrong direction, blocking your sunlight, in danger of falling? Take care of this and call us, the professionals, Community Tree Service. We're licensed, insured, and we offer free estimates and are ever ready in emergency situations. We take pride in being reliable and will accommodate your needs with safe professional service and advice. Call our office today at 763-2391 or from Santa Cruz, 426-6340.
Dave Allen, A Blast to the Past, Sunday afternoons at 5 p.m.
Love to you.
my drift? Sunday afternoons, 5 p.m. here on AM 1080 KSEO. Get with the program.
I have a few new recipes for you. Hi, it's Sophie again, and I wanted to let you know that I've got a great collection of recipes now, thanks to the wonderful Youngevity products, but also thanks to you. I've gotten great suggestions for treats and so much inspiration from you. For example, take a vanilla Nature's Way shake, add half a cup of brewed ginger tea, splash in a bit of orange flower water, and you have a ginger blossom. That came from a lovely lady who called in response to one of my ads. She does the ginger tea in her shake every morning, and she was nice enough to call me and share her idea with me. Now, I added the suggestion for the orange flower water and the name, but I think that proves that together we can accomplish some pretty great things. I have a lot more recipes, but I can always use more inspiration. So call me, Sophie Winnick, at 335-3216, 335-3216. Talk to you soon.
May I have the attention of all KSCO and KOMY listeners who want to feel good and save money. All others must disregard this message under penalty of law. We are finally having a sale on Youngevity products at KSCO Radio this Friday and Saturday from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Savings will range anywhere from 20 to 50% for expired but perfectly good products, and for non-sale products purchased, you will receive certain selected free products of your choice. Nobody will walk away mad, with the possible exception of an occasional humorless liberal. This will be an epic event, because the more you spend, the more you will get, and I'm dead serious. Buy a pig pack and receive a free bottle of Vitality, Nature's Way, or Rebound FX. Last chance for the buy three, get one free Slender FX promotion. Why, we'll even let you sample products first, so you don't end up buying something that makes you gag, even though it is good for you. Remember the first and probably last epic longevity product blowout sale this Friday and Saturday from 1 to 6 p.m. at your favorite radio stations, AM 1080 KSCO and AM 1340 KOMY. 2300 Portola Drive in the Lagoon, no, at the Lagoon, in Live Oak. Don't miss it.
Just a reminder, today is the last day of the sale, so get it while it's hot.
Thanks, Dave. Back on the air with the Saturday special. Charlie Friedman here, and the telephone number is 479-1080. Joe in, he dropped. Let me see. Well, we'll take Asa in Live Oak. Asa, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing just fine. I'm enjoying this beautiful sunny weather, but I haven't heard all this program, so I'm afraid maybe you've had this question already this morning.
What's
Never
that?
Let. Well, we have been, my husband and I, we have been sitting here pondering and trying to figure out, and we cannot figure it out, how people can misinterpret something like the cartoons, something like the Pope's comments, something innocent, in other words.
Asa, there's an easy answer to that one.
What?
They do it intentionally.
Well, I don't understand it. I don't understand how. Why can't? I mean, I just can't understand how they do it instantaneously all over the whole universe.
Well, the reason is because there are a certain number of people in this particular case in the Islamic world. These wild-eyed individuals. There are a certain number of them. And they all react basically the same way, because they're all coming from the same philosophical point of view. So when the Pope makes a statement and points out that, hey, you know, it's a problem that Islam sometimes converts people at gunpoint, and the first thing they do is start excoriating the Pope rather than saying, well, gee, maybe this is true, because you see, they are the type of people who would do that.
Yeah, but I don't know, but they can't read to the bottom of the page, or they can't know that the Pope was only quoting somebody else's statement?
They're not interested in that. What they are interested in doing is making propaganda points. And, of course, then it's the Western press which steps right up and helps them. And that's what I think galls me most.
Well, the thing is, I don't understand. I'm not a conspiracy buff, but I just, it's so hard for me to understand. In other words, you take a normal little ordinary community organization.
Yeah.
You have a lucky time if you get three people to the meeting.
Well, you're right, of course, but bear in mind we're dealing with a group of people.
Not
here.
Human beings, I don't think.
They are something very special. Something,
well,
and I'm not saying that in a complimentary way.
No, I understand that. I understand. But I just thought maybe there was something I didn't know. I mean,
I think the one thing I would tell you is they do it on purpose. It's not a matter of misinterpreting. No, it's a matter of absolute malice aforethought, purposeful distortion is what it is.
But that there are people, apparently, the few people, but masses of them don't even believe it's a distortion. They believe it, that they believe that they're... They must believe that they're rioting over something.
That is the whole purpose of propaganda. You've just described it in a nutshell, and I compliment you for it.
What?
You know, I'm glad you called today. I can always count on you for a real cheerful approach to any, even a serious project like this. I hear the laugh in your voice. You must be a very fun person.
I've had better years, but I love the weather, and I love our home, and I love the fact that we have KSCO. And I listen to C-SPAN. I can't read anymore because I can't see anymore. So I just love it when I have a chance to have some kind of interchange with somebody that knows something.
Well,
so
thanks so much.
You.
Well, I'm glad we're here for you.
Okay.
Have yourself a great day.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Joe in Salinas called back. Bless you for that, sir. Hello. How are you doing today? Welcome to KSCO.
Hey, I'm doing okay. I lost my signal for a second.
Oh, well, I'm glad you joined us again.
I'm heading up to the Republican picnic over in Toro Park. So I was listening to your caller a couple of calls ago. And, my God, you know, if anybody's under the or behind the eight ball around here, it's the Republican Party to think that, you know, we have any kind of special, you know, exalted place is ludicrous.
And the thing that gets me is all this, all the elections are being stolen, all the machines are being fiddled with, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I've often said if I could work my will, there would be no voting machines. In my ideal world, all elections would be conducted on paper ballots, like they were when I was a kid. They used to call them bedsheet ballots because if there were a lot of propositions, you'd have to unfold, you know, kind of like a roadmap, and it'd unfold and unfold, be, you know, about 4 feet wide and about 5 feet long or something like that. And here's this huge ballot. And, of course, that's one of the reasons they went to machines is because dealing with these things and trying to count them was a tremendous pain in the rear. On the other hand, you had an actual piece of paper with marks on it that you could look back at. If there was a dispute about an election, you could, okay, let's get out the ballots. It might take a couple of weeks, but you could recount the damn things. And have everybody there and everybody looking at it. And if an X isn't an X or it's not in the right box, then it doesn't count. And if you mark two X's for a particular office, then it doesn't count and so on and so forth. But in today's highly charged political atmosphere, I think that even a paper ballot election would probably lead some people to have Dave's reaction. Ah, it's all being stolen. Help. We're all going to hell on a fast train.
Yeah.
I don't know what your point about in the local area, the Republicans are behind the eight. Well, that's been true for a long time now. I can remember a time when Santa Cruz County was a Republican stronghold, but that was before they built that damn university,
brought in all these
screwy left-wingers, and, you know, that was the end of that. But
now it's kind of coming back to bite them because now... people over in your area, I think, are tired of their influence, and so they don't want to allow more students to come in.
Well, that'll be an interesting one to watch, won't it? But I'll tell you what, over where you live and where I live, Watsonville for me and Salinas for you, we, I think, have maybe an outside chance of getting Ignacio Velasquez elected to the Assembly.
Outside?
Given the way the district is drawn, it's going to be a very difficult thing to elect a Republican. But Ignacio is such a quality guy and such a capable, fine candidate. And the district has, granted, it's overwhelmingly Democrats, but there are a lot of conservative Democrats in that district whose votes can be won by a good guy like Ignacio. So I frankly think that if I had to rate it on a chance, like how many chances in 10, I'd say he's got 4 chances in 10, which is more than any other Republican challenger in the state would have. You still there? Oh, we lost him. Gracious, I hated when that happens. Okay, well, maybe his phone went fooey. Let me see. Who's been on hold longest? That would be Liz in Felton. Hello, Liz. Welcome to KSCO.
Hello. Hello.
Yes.
I'd like to take a little exception to your comment about Osama bin Laden being dumb.
Okay, go right ahead, please.
I think Osama bin Laden may be a lot of negative things, including pretty psychopathic, if such a thing can be defined in terms of Islamism. But anyway, I don't think he's dumb because... I think we lose track because of the fact that the one ploy that he, that his group made at 9/11 was the successful shattering of the World Trade Center. We lose track of the overall plot that was implemented that day, with all the different planes being organized and heading off for destructive missions.
Okay.
If that had occurred, the United States would be out of commission.
I see the point you're making, the fact that the organization of this plot required a tremendous amount of coordination. Says, I'll concede that point. I agree. You're right. The reason I said what I said, and you know, again, I may be wrong, so that's why I'm really glad you called. But the reason I said what I said is because I don't believe that the result of this plot and its success was anything near what Osama figured it would be. I think his first of all, he didn't figure on us having a president who was simply going to say, I'm sorry, you're going to do this. We're going to swat you like a fly. And promptly throwing the Taliban out of Afghanistan and depriving Osama of his natural habitat, to use an ecologist phrase. Now the guy's running around in the mountains of Pakistan, one step ahead of the sheriff. So I really don't think that it turned out the way he had foreseen it. And that's why I said I didn't think he was all that bright. But the point you made about what it took to plan it, you're absolutely right. There's no question.
And therefore, I think he is somebody that we ought to still find out about and get rid of. And he was number two on my list for somebody who ought to be gone. I will say that what we all need to remember when we're thinking about these things is that we, the citizen, are not, the ordinary citizen, are probably not in privy to the kind of information that the people at the top may have,
you know,
at their disposal.
I'm glad you said that, and I'm going to share something with you.
And so that is something to be considered in appraising the situation. About the Pope, I want to say that I understood that after Pope Paul was shot fairly early in his reign, that he employed psychologists to help him watch out for the crowds that he drew when he traveled and so forth,
mm-hmm.
and to protect as much as possible mm-hmm. himself. Mm-hmm. And that one of the ploys of behavioral psychologists, I've worked in those fields,
yeah.
One of the ploys they use is apology, which seems to work even after all these times it's been used, say, by people like Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to work pretty well. And so that maybe the Pope was trying to offset the possibility that some bomb or some airplane or some who knows what would be lobbed on top of St. Peter's or something.
Liz, that makes some sense. On the other hand, a man in his position has a responsibility beyond himself, which I'm sure he's aware of.
Moreover, what I heard said about the whole thing when it first came into the news was he apologized for hurting their feelings rather than for making the statements of fact early emperor.
That's basically true, but he elaborated on it since then. Listen, I got a bunch of other callers. I got to let you go, but I want to thank you for your call.
A very good program, I must say.
Oh, I appreciate it. Hey, join me again tomorrow. I'll be here from 11 to 1.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We've got several people on the phone, and I want to try to get them all in. Let me see here. Paul has been here longer than anybody else. Paul, how are you today? And welcome to KSCO.
Hello, Charlie. On this day of the Red, White, and Blue Barbecue at Toro Park, I would like to pay tribute to Monterey County Committee Chair Peter Newman.
A fine man.
A fine man. And every once in a while, he sends out an email of, and it describes just exactly how many elected officials in Monterey County are actually registered Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot more than you would think. It's pretty impressive. So
mm-hmm.
he's a bulldog, man, and he doesn't quit. So just tribute to Peter Newman.
I couldn't say it better, and I appreciate you calling and saying it here.
Thank you.
Peter Newman's a fine guy. I met him a number of years ago when Bill McCampbell was running for Congress, and really just a fine guy. Let's see here. We got two calls more to clear. Here is Thor in Monterey. Thank you for calling KSCO.
Yeah, hey, real quick about Peter Newman. He kind of talked me into registering Republican, although I was kind of disillusioned with the party at the time, but I did register.
Well, having been a lifelong Republican, I can tell you that from time to time the party has really, really irritated me.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a family irritation, you know. It's kind of like your sister does something you don't like, but she's still your sister.
Well, looking at the alternatives, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, on the other side, crap-a-rooney.
One of the issues I wanted to bring up real quick was the Busby race. I'm really surprised that she lost, because she was trying to get the she was trying to enlist the illegal aliens to try to vote for her. If you remember that,
she did make a statement to the effect: "Forget about papers, go down and vote." Mm-hmm. And that cost her a lot of votes.
Yeah,
nobody made her say that. There was no Republican putting words in her mouth. She said that, and it hurt her badly.
Yeah.
But there's one other thing you've got to remember, and this is why a couple of minutes ago some guy says, you know, Ignacio Velasquez is a lock. There's only one problem. Right now, the districts in California are gerrymandered, horribly gerrymandered.
Oh, yeah.
And what we have, this is not, it's not a partisan gerrymander in the sense that all the seats are Republican or all the seats are Democratic. It's a gerrymander in the sense of it's an incumbent protection plan. The seats that are Democratic, period.
Yeah.
The seats that are Republican, period. That's why Busby could not win. That's why Velasquez has a hell of a job ahead of him. Although, in all fairness, the 28th AD hasn't been as badly doctored as some of them. Peter won basically the same district. Peter Frazetta won it three times. So Ignacio has a shot, but nevertheless, he's going to have to run like 25 points ahead of party registration, 20 points ahead of party registration in order to win.
Yeah.
That's a hell of an achievement. But yeah, the Bill Bray district, that district has something like 53 or 54% registered Republicans, so, you know.
The other thing real quick is I think we really need to consider going back to a punch card type system for voting and get rid of the voting machines.
Oh, the hanging chads, woo!
Well, I think that was a very small problem. Of course, what they were saying is the reason why there was the potentially problem with dimples and hanging chads, especially the dimple chad, is that that's a possible problem with the machine, is that when they have them after hours, the fraud people could take and shove like 10 cards into the time and try to punch them.
I'll tell you what, I don't care for the punch cards. I got to disagree with you there. Here in Santa Cruz County, we use cards, but instead of punching them, you take a pen and you mark, you know, like the kids do on multiple choice tests.
And, yeah, that's fine too.
That is what I think would be, and then you've got a card that's an absolute record of the vote.
Yes.
What I
and
don't care for.
You take all your cards to an independent counting, agency or whatever.
The county clerk counts them. I trust the elections officers,
The problem with the machines, I'm a computer science security professional, and it's so easy to change if it's just pure data. You have to have something that you can, that can't be modified. Now, they do on the Sequoia machines, they do have a paper thing that does some kind of barcode, but unless they do some random auditing of that, to me, I don't see that's really buying you anything.
Well, what I don't really think I'm going to like very much are these touch screen things.
Have you used one yet?
No, I haven't. They had one over at the county fair. I guess I should have gone in and monkeyed with it. But
they're not
bad.
I've used it a couple times so far. And like I said, they do have a, it's like an adding machine tape that runs through, and it prints out what your selections are. And then you could basically cancel out of that if something is a mistake, and it voids that. And then you could, you know, go through the touch screen again and enter what you want.
Excellent. Well, it sounds to me like you've made quite a study of this, and it's in your field, so you're pretty well informed. I'm glad you called.
Yeah, thanks.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. See, that's one of the things I love about doing talk radio. You have some guy who, like Dave, who calls in and, you know, basically urinates all over the floor about the voting machines and this and that, and you have another guy call in and say, hey, you know, these things actually work pretty doggone well, and here's the ins and outs of them. I actually understand these things. It's my job. It's my business. And, you know, take your claws out of the ceiling and relax. These things are not going to be the end of the world. God bless you, sir. I'm Thor in Monterey. I am glad you called. So, Cal Bob, I believe that would be Mr. Listener, would it not?
Good talking to you, Charlie.
Welcome to KSCO.
I would have called sooner, but I was busy. I just heard the last call from Liz, and I wanted to sort of respond not to her so much, but to what we should have done with Bin Laden.
Well, in this particular case, your timing is fortuitous because you're going to be closing the show. Go ahead, please.
Well, one of the things that we could have done, and this is what I've heard from several sources, is we had the 10th Mountain Division, we had the Marine Corps, the 1st Marine Corps, and we had the special operations ready to go in and take out bin Laden, but instead we used some ragtag mercenaries, the Northern Alliance, to do the job. They screwed it up, so we could have had him.
I've heard that, too, and I agree with you. That was definitely a screw-up. I'll give you another example of a screw-up. Right after, you know, you remember when we went into Iraq, when the statue of Saddam was pulled down and everything?
I do remember.
And how great a moment that was. Now, the next thing, like within a couple of days, what happened? Looting everywhere. People breaking into to shops, people breaking into this and that and the other, just carrying off all kinds of merchandise.
Right.
That was an absolute fiasco.
Well, that, I think
of
what,
all the things we did in Iraq, that the one thing that, that was the worst, in my opinion, was that at the outset, when we had to establish an occupation, we did not establish the rule of law. We made it look as if freedom and democracy meant running wild in the streets. And that was a god-awful mistake, and I think we're still paying for it.
I think that ties into that, the way the seven generals that criticized Rumsfeld were talking about. I'm just guessing, but I think that's one of the things that they might have been concerned about. The war hasn't been run right, hasn't been done creatively. We haven't managed to fine-tune the whole military operation. This is where I have some problems.
Go ahead.
Well, that's all I wanted to say because...
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were right in the middle of your idea. My mistake.
Well, you can respond to that if you want, but my whole notion is we're going to have a war like this. It's got to be run right.
Well, I certainly can't argue with that. And as you just pointed out a major mistake, and I just pointed out another one.
Exactly.
So, you know, in this particular case, this is something that, even I, who am I'm a supporter of the president, I'm a supporter of the idea of going into Iraq, but I'm not going to sit here and say, well, everything has been done just hunky dory. I'm an idiot if I say that.
Well, I'm not a supporter of the president. I'm not a supporter of going into Iraq, but that's another subject for another day, I guess.
Hey, you might even call back tomorrow. I'll be here from, 11 to 1.
Good to talk to a sensible Republican.
Thank you, sir. Pleasure. Have a good day. That's Uncle Bob over there in Aptos. Let me see. And we have Rich and Salinas on the line. Rich, welcome to KSCO. You got a couple of minutes.
Yeah, hi. Just real briefly, I worked the special election about a year ago. This is where Snicker called.
Splendid. I'm glad you called.
And we in our little area, the library that I worked in, with the people coming in, the biggest problem we had was people... you're getting rerouted to another area where they were supposed to vote. They were coming to ours, and I guess they used to vote there, and they had changed the voting location.
Well, that always causes confusion.
I know. About a third of the people that came in had to go rerouted to another location. But on the machines themselves, I got trained on them.
Yes.
And at the end of the
what sort of machine were you using, sir?
Well, touch tones.
Okay. Go ahead.
And it worked real great. At the end of the day, though, when we had to do the tally up, we had four recounts on the tally, so we made sure we had the correct numbers, and we were only off, I think, three on the count. And that was balancing the number on the tape with the register of the number of people that came in and actually voted.
Right.
So there's a way to check that, you know, and then once you turn them into the election headquarters, and what they do with it, I don't know. But it was fairly safe. In other words, it's hard to rig anything because you had to tally it up and double-check the numbers. And I was the fourth one that checked it of the four of us that were there. And so we all came up with you know, various amounts all within the same number until we got the exact number that matched up. But we were three off, I think. And we were one of the closer ones, what I was told.
Also, one other thing. You mentioned you worked on an election crew one time. I did, too, when they had the recall election about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Right.
I was in on that at the time. I wasn't working, so I had the time. So I worked at a polling place over in Freedom. And we had a four-person crew there, and they go out of their way to make sure that it's balanced. There were two Republicans and two Democrats on that crew. And so, you know, anybody who tried to pull any shenanigans, obviously there'd be somebody from the other party there saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But the other thing that impressed me most was that no one would have even considered it. All four people who were there really had a commitment to doing it right, to doing it honest, to doing it straight, to doing it professionally. And this was something that all four of us just accepted the same way we accept that water is wet and air is good to breathe.
Yeah, exactly the way it was with me, too. And I was the only non-Hispanic there. Everybody else was Hispanic. And so I couldn't speak to some of the people that came in that didn't even speak English, which
right.
was the only concern I had.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody voting that didn't know how to speak English, they had to be helped with the machines. But other than that, no, we worked. We wanted to be the best crew, and we wanted to do the best job. And, boy, we were out there hustling. I didn't even take a lunch break. It was fun. I enjoyed it.
Well, thanks for calling and saying it here. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one. That's the end of the program today. I will be with you. This is the Saturday special. I think MZ will be back next week. I will be with you tomorrow sitting in for Cyril Vitomsky on the Embassy of the New World Order. Charlie Friedman be back at 11 tomorrow. This is KSCO Santa Cruz.
Up-to-the-minute news and the best in talk, AM 1080, KSCO Santa Cruz and AM 1340, KOMY Watsonville.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler. Osama bin Laden dead? U.S. intelligence sources saying don't believe ever.